Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here, hosting this week. As usual, all of the latest J2 and J3 news is coming your way shortly. In this episode, in part one, I'm going to give you a solo rundown of all of the latest J2 action. That's the results from round 38 last weekend. Then in part two, I got together with pod favourite Sean Carroll, and we had a kind of State of the Union chat about promotion and playoffs and relegation in J2. So please stay tuned for that. As always, following that discussion, Magic Mike Innes is back. He's got all the J3 news coming up in the JTalk Short Corner segment. So without further ado, let's talk J2. Round 38 took place last weekend. All five of the teams at the top of the table, the top five places, picked up 3 points, including leaders Niigata, but they needed a late goal from substitute Hiroki Akiyama to get past a stubborn Omiya side at the Big Swan Stadium. So yes, it finished Niigata 1, Omiya 0, in front of a fantastic and J1 ready crowd of over 20,800 people, by the way. The goal came in the 72nd minute when Niigata tried to play their way through Omiya's defence with a very slick one-touch passing move. The ball eventually broke loose inside the penalty area and Akiyama was on hand to sweep it past Ko Shimura in the Omiya goal. And despite being on the back foot for most of the match, Omiya did cause Niigata some problems, especially just before half-time when Takamitsu Tomiyama hit the inside of the post with a header from a corner. And then Omiya threatened again around the hour mark when Masaya Shibayama forced a good save from Ryosuke Kojima. But yep, Niigata 1, Omiya 0 was the final score. A fourth straight win for Niigata. It keeps them top of the table and crucially 8 points clear of Okayama, who are third. Surely Niigata are going up. That's a question that I asked Sean for part two. Meanwhile, for Omiya, they remain a very healthy 5 points clear of the relegation zone. They're in 19th. Second-placed Yokohama FC produced a very disciplined performance to win 2-0 at Nagasaki. There was a long delay at the end of the first half in this game after a worrying head injury for Yokohama goalkeeper Sven Brodersen. Luckily, he's okay, but we'll talk more about that in a moment. It was also a busy night for veteran Nagasaki forward Ken Tokuda. He took part in a pre-match ceremony to celebrate his 400th J-League appearance, but then had to go off injured after just 19 minutes. So unfortunate premature end to the evening for Tokuda. Yokohama took the lead on the half hour through their Brazilian striker Marcelo Hian scoring his first goal in the J-League. In fact, Nagasaki nearly went in front at the other end at the start of this move, but Brodersen saved well from Koya Okada, and then the ball was cleared into the Nagasaki half by Toa Yamane. Marcelo Hian then absolutely smoked the covering defender Shutaki Kuchi. He beat him to the loose ball, got into the penalty area, and then fired straight through Nagasaki keeper Takashi Kasahara at his near post. So Yokohama 1-0 up after about half an hour. And then right at the end of the first half, there was this collision, accidental, between Brodersen and Nagasaki's Shunya Yoneda. Now, Yoneda was able to walk away unscathed, but he was substituted at halftime as a precaution. For Brodersen, things initially looked much more serious. He lay in a prone position inside the 6-yard box for a long time, I think around 10 or 15 minutes, while having medical attention. Eventually, an ambulance was brought pitch side, and he was put in the back and taken to hospital. But the news coming out of the club this week is good. I think he went to hospital for some concussion checks, but now he's back home and he's okay. So I'm not sure if he'll be available for the next game, but no long-term damage. I think Brodersen's going to be okay. And while Brodersen was being driven out of the stadium in an ambulance, the half-time whistle blew. At the start of the second half, Yokohama got a vital second goal quite early on through captain Tatsuya Hasegawa. In the 49th minute, he collected a loose ball near the edge of Nagasaki's penalty area and then fired in a 20-yard curler that went in off the post to make it 2-0. It was nearly 3-0 when Kasahara was called upon to make a double save from Koki Ogawa and Hasegawa again. But in the end, it was a very professional Yokohama FC win. It finished Nagasaki 0, Yokohama FC 2. Yokohama stay 5 points ahead of third-placed Okayama with 4 rounds of the J2 season left to play. For Nagasaki, well, they're still in with a playoff chance, but they're 4 points off the top six. And perhaps more importantly, they've only won one of their last six games. So, they need to pick up form quickly if they're going to get into the top six this season. Speaking of Okayama, they brushed aside another top six side, Sendai, 3-0 at City Light Stadium. There was no Mitch Duke up front for Okayama this week. He was away with the Australian national team on international duty, so there was a slight change in Okayama's system. Stefan Mork and Ryo Nagai were the two strikers, and this pair combined for the opening goal 5 minutes before half-time, as Mork traded passes with Nagai and then fired past Sendai keeper Yuma Obata from 12 yards. Then 6 minutes into the second half, it was 2-0. Ryosuke Kawano's right-wing cross made it all the way to the back post, where Kodai Sano arrived to convert the chance from about 6 yards. So the game seemed to be up for Sendai at that point. Okayama then glossed the scoreline with a third goal in second half stoppage time. Sendai centre-back Yota Sato gifted the ball to rookie Okayama midfielder Taishi Senba with a lazy and casual high ball. Senba's initial shot was well saved by Obata, but the rebound came back to him and he was able to head it in to make it 3-0. So final score was Okayama 3, Sendai 0. Okayama now have 69 points, which I think is a club record for a single season, and they're virtually guaranteed a top six finish now. They just need one more point to confirm it, and as mentioned, they're 5 points behind Yokohama FC. For Sendai, they're now 6 in the table, but only one win in their last 8 games. They're in serious danger of slipping out of the top six altogether, and their managerial change a few weeks ago hasn't given them much of a bounce at all. In fourth place, Kumamoto's incredible season continues. They're up to fourth after winning 1-0 at Jeff Chiba. The crucial goal came just before the hour from Kohei Kuroki, a flowing passing move, which ended with him putting in a shot from the edge of the penalty area, which took a deflection off defender Iki Arai to take it over his goalkeeper, Shota Arai, and into the net. Kumamoto had some chances to take the lead before that, so Kawahara went close before half-time, and Naohiro Sugiyama had blazed over from close range early in the second period. And Kumamoto did have the ball in the net late on via Henry Ioha, but the goal was disallowed for quite a harsh offside, I think, against another Kumamoto player who didn't seem to be interfering with play. But none of that mattered in the end, because yes, Kumamoto did win 1-0 away at Jeff Chiba. Kumamoto 9 points clear of 7th place, so a playoff place looks increasingly likely for them. Also, we should mention they're 6 games unbeaten and they're in great form at the moment. Another team who are in form and looking good are Oita. They're now 5th after a 2-1 home win over Kofu. In this game, Oita got a perfect start midway through the first half when a corner from Hokuto Shimoda was inadvertently flicked on by a Kofu defender for Brazilian centre-back Pereira to head in for 1-0. That's his third goal in 3 matches. Kofu came back strongly though, and their Brazilian defender Eduardo Mancha was inches away from converting a low cross at the far post just before half time. And in the second period, Kofu created enough chances to have won 2 or 3 games. Oita goalkeeper Shun Yoshida made a flying save from a William Lira header, but it was 1-1 in the 64th minute. Another header from William Lira from a Masahiro Sekiguchi cross, this time looped over Yoshida and into the net. So parity was restored midway through the second half. Kofu could have won the game after that. Motoki Hasegawa saw his shot beaten away by Yoshida, and then a lob from Junma Miyazaki was heading into the net before it was superbly cleared by a covering Oita defender who clattered into the goalpost while doing his important defensive duties. 4 minutes of stoppage time were indicated at the end of the game, but we ended up going into a 5th minute of added time, and in that 5th minute, a deep cross from Kenta Inoue was brought down by Asahi Masayama inside the penalty area for Shun Nagasawa to pivot and fire into the net from just inside the six-yard box for Oita's winner. And as soon as Kofu restarted the game at the kickoff, the referee blew the full-time whistle. So yes, it finished Oita 2, Kofu 1. Oita, 6 games unbeaten and 5 points clear of the 7th place side in the table, Yamagata. Although we should keep in mind, Yamagata do have 1 game in hand. Switching gears to look at the foot of the table, things are starting to look very bleak for FC Ryukyu. They drew 0-0 at Tochigi on Sunday evening, a result that leaves them 5 points adrift of safety. It was a very tense game at Tochigi Green Stadium, and to be honest, not much quality and very few chances in the 90 minutes. Ryukyu's big moment came in second half stoppage time, but Ren Ikeda headed straight at Tochigi's goalkeeper Shuhei Kawata when he should really have done a bit better and scored. But it finished Tochigi 0, Ryukyu 0. For Ryukyu, well, they haven't scored any goals in any of their last 6 matches, and have only taken 4 points from the last 21 available. It's starting to look really difficult to make a case for them surviving this year, whereas Tochigi are 18th and a full 9 points clear of the drop zone. Even if they're not mathematically safe, I think they could start planning for next season in J2. Over at Iwagin Stadium, Kanazawa added to Iwate's relegation fears and virtually secured their own J2 survival by winning 3-1. Kanazawa were 2-0 up and in control of this game at the break after goals from Hiroya Matsumoto and Masamichi Hayashi. In the 29th minute, Matsumoto put in a low shot from the edge of the penalty area that went in off the post for 1-0 to the visitors. And 7 minutes later, it was 2-0 with Hayashi easily holding off his defender and firing the ball in at the near post after a throw-in from Riku Matsuda had made it all the way through to him on the edge of Iwate's 6-yard box. A good goal and a good finish, but a pretty poor defending from Iwate. Early in the second half, it was nearly 3-0 after a frantic goal-mouth scramble, but Iwate's Taisuke Nakamura managed to head the ball off the line twice in the space of about 10 seconds to keep Iwate in the game. And things got a little bit more interesting in the 74th minute when Iwate actually pulled a goal back, Cristiano heading home from about 6 yards after a right-wing cross from Brenner. So 2-1 to Kanazawa going into the closing stages. But the away side sealed the points with a breakaway goal in the 83rd minute. Ryuhei Oishi sent Kyohei Sugiura clean through. And although Iwate's goalkeeper Taishi Brandon Nozawa made a good save initially, the loose ball, the rebound fell nicely for the onrushing Hiroya Matsumoto. And he volleyed into the empty net from about 16 yards. So a second goal of the game for him and 3 for Kanazawa. And that was enough to give them all 3 points. It finished Iwate 1, Kanazawa 3. Kanazawa now 12 points clear of the relegation zone with only 4 rounds to go. Surely they are safe. Even James and Victor should be able to relax now, you'd have to think. Meanwhile, Iwate are second bottom and 3 points adrift of safety. They also have a vastly inferior goal difference to the side directly above them in the table. Now, that side directly above Iwate is Gunma, and they had a real day to forget at home to Yamaguchi in round 38, losing 6-1. Now, Georgi Ikegami had already warmed Gunma goalkeeper Koji Yamada's gloves with an early shot before he put Yamaguchi ahead in the 13th minute, rifling the ball in from 10 yards after a knockdown from Tsubasa Umeki. Umeki then saw a header come back off the inside of the post as Yamaguchi threatened to run riot, and he scored the visitors' second goal in the 23rd minute, converting from close range after Yamada had blocked a shot from Masakazu Yoshioka. The pick of the Yamaguchi goals came after around an hour, a sublime side-on volley from Kazuma Takai, connecting with a cross from Hiroyuki Mai. Just absolutely fantastic technique from Takai, and he's one of the only players in J2 who could score a goal like that. It's worth checking out. In the last 20 minutes, Gunma collapsed completely and conceded 3 more goals. Atsuki Yamanaka put the ball into his own net for an own goal to make it 4-0, although I think the J-League website is crediting Takai with the goal. I think that's incredibly generous. Then the impressive Kento Hashimoto cross low into the box, and Takai swept in his second, or third goal if we're being official, a hat-trick goal, and Yamaguchi's fifth past a shell-shot-looking Yamada. Gunma then pulled a goal back in the 89th minute, Shu Hiramatsu volleying in at the near post from a Yuya Takagi cross from the left, but it was 6-1 before full-time, Kazuhito Kishida tapping in from 6 yards after a miss-hit shot from Koji Yamase fell to him completely unmarked. So a horrible afternoon for Gunma. The final score was Gunma 1, Yamaguchi 6. However, it was a first defeat in 5 for the strugglers, Gunma. And as mentioned, they are 3 points ahead of Iwate with that possibly vitally important, much better goal difference. Although a few more 6-goal defeats will wipe that out, of course. Yamaguchi, they're now mathematically safe, and they look very very pleased with themselves, sitting in 14th place. In other games, Yamagata's hopes of a playoff place took a hit as they lost 1-0 away at Tokyo Verdy in a game that featured a lengthy delay due to thunder and lightning. The match kicked off on time, but due to approaching thunder and lightning over Ajinomoto Stadium, the players were taken off the pitch midway through the first half, and after a break of about 90 minutes, not ideal for either side, play resumed. When the game did restart, Verdy had the better of things up until half-time. Yamagata keeper Masaaki Goto was very busy, made some fine saves. Then at the start of the second half, it was Goto's opposite number, Mateus, who needed to make a good save from Akira Disaro as Yamagata threatened to go in front. But it was Verdy who took the lead in the 52nd minute, Boniface Nduka heading in a deep cross from Koki Morita after a short corner kick routine. One interesting point here, the assistant referee actually put his flag up for offside against the Verdy player, I think, on this goal, but he was overruled by the referee. And the goal was given, I think, correctly, although Yamagata might have some complaints. We should make a special mention, too, for Verdy defender Daiki Fukuzawa, who produced an absolutely brilliant piece of defending to deny Thiago Alves an equaliser for Yamagata. Fukuzawa brilliantly slid in to make a block and then made another great block inside the 6-yard box as part of the same defensive action. So fantastic work from him. Ryoga Sato could have sealed Verdy's win with a second goal late on, but he blazed the ball over the crossbar when he should have hit the target. But it finished Tokyo Verdy 1, Yamagata 0. Yamagata in 7th place, 4 points off the top 6, as we mentioned, but they do have that game in hand coming up against Omiya. Amazingly, or perhaps totally predictably, depending on how closely you follow J2, Tokushima drew for the 23rd time this season, 1-1 at home to Mito. There were chances for both sides in a goalless first half, including a goal line clearance from Mito, but Tokushima went ahead in the 57th minute when their two Brazilian defenders combined and El Sino's corner was headed in by Kaká at the near post to make it 1-0. The point's been made before, though. Tokushima love a draw, and they allowed Mito to equalise midway through the second half when Shoji Toyama got on the end of Takaya Kuroishi's right wing cross with a diving header to make it 1-1. After that, it was Mito who, by the way, changed 10 players from their starting lineup from the midweek game against Tokyo Verdy, who finished stronger, and Tokushima's keeper Jose Suarez had to make a couple of big saves, including a point blank range stop when Ryosuke Maeda went clean through. So it finished Tokushima 1, Mito 1. Tokushima in 9th place, 6 points off the top 6, with 4 games left to play. They might have left it too late to charge into the top 6 for this season. Finally, for round 38 in J2 at Soyu Stadium, Akita all but ended Machida's hopes of reaching the playoffs with a 2-1 home win. This was Akita's first home win since May, and they got off to a real flyer by taking the lead in the 12th minute. Ryota Nakamura's high cross from the right flank was volleyed onto goal by Jurato Ikeda at the far post, and the ball just about crossed the line before being clawed away by Machida keeper Koki Fukui. So 1-0 to Akita early on. It was pretty clear that Machida boss Ranko Popovic was not happy with proceedings because he made a double substitution after just 25 minutes here. Dudu and Yu Hirakawa came on in place of Yuki Nakashima and Kazuma Yamaguchi. Machida did get back on level terms via a penalty from Dudu in the 57th minute after Hirakawa had been tripped by Ikeda inside the box. The only unsavoury aspect of this goal was about six Machida players sprinting to surround the referee and shout in his face and jostle him to make sure that he awarded the penalty. Pretty amazing that nobody got a yellow card for that kind of breakdown of control from quite a few Machida players. Yes, but anyway, penalty was given, scored by Dudu to make it 1-1. Following that, Akita keeper Yudai Tanaka made an unbelievable close-range stop from a pile driver from Aria Jasuru Hasegawa, but then Akita went back in front. Nakamura was the provider from the right wing again, this time with a low cross that found Ibuki Yoshida completely unmarked inside the six-yard box. Even he couldn't miss from there, and it was 2-1 to Akita in the 74th minute. There was time for another late super save from Tanaka, this time from Dudu, and it amused me that the referee awarded a goal kick, even though this was clearly a corner. This time the Machida players didn't have the energy to get into the referee's face and push him around. So yes, it finished Akita 2, Machida 1. Machida surely now destined to miss out on the playoffs this season. They're 8 points off the top six with 4 rounds to play. And it was announced in midweek that, yes, Machida manager Ranko Popovic will be leaving the club at the end of this season, along with their general manager and kind of head of player recruitment. So, yes, I think it's going to be all change at Machida next season. It's going to be interesting to see where they go from here. Speaking of all change, though, that's all from me for the J2 Round 38 wrap-up. Please stay tuned after a quick musical sting. You're going to hear me in conversation with Sean Carroll. We're going to try and take a look at the promotion and relegation picture and make some bold predictions. So, yeah, please stay tuned. My chat with Sean is coming up next. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again, and for this section, I'm joined by one of the great Seans, along with Sean Paul and Sean the Sheep. It's Sean Carroll. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, thank you. That's one of the best intros I've ever received. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we worked hard on it. I'm glad it was appreciated.
Did I tell you I've had a picture taken with Sean the Sheep?
Oh, really?
Have I told you the story?
Yeah, no.
I was at this kind of event. I don't know. You probably know you with kids. You know you. They have these events in Japan where you go along to like a big
expo,
big kind of hall, and there'll be like different stands, different stalls, whatever, selling different things, and they'll sometimes have characters wandering around. And there was a Sean the Sheep there, and I was saying to the people I was working with, like, I need to get a picture with him. I need to have a picture with Sean, and they were like, okay, well, you know, when we finish this, whatever. And then I ran over. I could see him. He was ducking to get back, kind of behind the scenes. Obviously,
you're like, not so fast.
I don't want to to ruin any children listening. Maybe parents, you should pause it now. But it's not actually a Shaun the Sheep. There's just a bloke inside a costume. So he was obviously heading backstage to I don't know, have a cigarette or, you know, get this costume off. And I was like running towards him. I said, "Quick, can I have a picture?" And he didn't look best pleased because he was so close to finishing his shift. But I did manage to get it. I was delighted to get a picture with Sean. So sometimes with my with students, when they'll talk about Sean the Sheep, I'll be like, I've met Sean the Sheep, and I'll whack out the picture just for us, a bit of kudos.
Fantastic. It's a good anecdote, Sean, and that does mean you do now have to post that picture on Twitter as part of the promotion for this episode. So if you don't mind,
I'll try to dig it out. If enough people request it, I'll dig it out. We can maybe tie it into the Patreon thing, can't we? Like,
if you get another
five Patreon after this, I'll post my red hot Sean the Sheep content.
Okay. Well, that's an offer that the listeners, I'm sure, can't refuse. So yeah.
And wait till you hear my Sean Paul story.
All right. Okay. Well, definitely save that for the patrons. Yeah.
I'll also have to save that for when I've actually met
Sean Paul. Well, any day now. World Cup's coming up, international.
Exactly. You know, yeah. Meeting. You'll probably be performing at the opening ceremony.
Well, Sean, it's really good to chat, my friend. I think we talked back in March, right in the sort of early days of the J2 season.
Oh, God, it's that long. So I'm bookending
this. Well, I think the idea was we were going to sort of check in on a kind of monthly or semi, you know, regular basis during the season. But for whatever reason, that's not – I think maybe because the season's just been a real rush this year.
Yeah, we didn't have some big falling out behind the scenes.
No, that's true. We did have you down for a couple of weeks ago, but due to my scheduling issues, that fell through. So apologies, yes. Apologies for that. I know you were disappointed that didn't eventuate. But
it's okay. We made it in the end.
Yeah, you're back now, and I think we are together again. Sort of like 35 matches, 35 rounds of J2 later. So obviously, yeah. A lot's happened in that time, uh-huh. And the listeners have already heard me kind of rattle through all of the kind of game by game details from last weekend from round 38 already. So what we're going to do this week together, Sean, is a little bit different. We're just going to have a kind of general State of the Union kind of chat about the J2 sort of league table and what we think is going to happen in the month or so of the season that's left. So without further ado, how about the automatic promotion picture at the top of the table, Sean? I'll go first so that it isn't a kind of, throw you under the bus situation. Niigata, they're top, they're going up, aren't they? They only need 4 or 5 points from the last four games to seal that mathematically. So I think Niigata... I know it's J2 and anything can happen, but Niigata are going up, I think. There's no two ways about it. Now, the battle for second place is kind of between Yokohama FC and Okayama. I think Yokohama, to be mathematically sure, they need 7 or 8 points from the games that they have left. Okayama are 5 points behind. How do you see this going? I mean, 5 points is a decent gap with only 4 games to go, but... I don't know, Yokohama, as we talked about a little bit in the green room, we talked about before, not the most impressive team when you're... They're a very effective team, but maybe not the most impressive when you watch them in the flesh. So Yokohama, well, first of all, do you agree that Niigata are a shoo-in, Sean? And what do you think about second place?
Yes, I do agree. Niigata are up. I think they've been very good, they've been consistent all season. They've just got they've got good depth. They lost Shion Homma. They've had a few injuries to other players who look like they would be key. Koji Suzuki, striker, picked up an injury, but Taniguchi's been filling in well. And then when Taniguchi's injured, Suzuki's come back. Komi, whose name I always forget his first name, but Komi and Shunsuke Mito have more than filled Shion Homma's boots, I think, so far. A couple of really good attacking wide players. So yeah, Niigata, I think, it's just a matter of time. Yokohama FC, I think, will probably get second, just because, as you say, yeah, they're a kind of efficient team. They get the results when they need. They picked up a 1-0 recently where it was a pretty tight game, and Koki Ogawa struck right at the end to get them the win. And I just think they've just got enough quality players. I don't know how well they will do back up in J1 next year with this squad. I'm not sure there's really enough quality to be up in J1, but that's obviously looking a bit too far ahead for now. But I think to get the points they need from their last four games, they've got Ryukyu, Oita, Kanazawa and Kumamoto. I think they should be able to get enough points from that, bearing in mind that obviously they've got that cushion of 5 points to Okayama, and Okayama could win their last four games. They've been in really good form. They've looked confident. And similarly to Albirex, they seem to have quite decent depth when certain players are missing. Like Mitch Duke was away at the weekend on national team duty, but they didn't really miss him at all against Sendai. So Okayama, I think they've got the momentum, so they could win all 4 of their games. But even then, they'll need Yokohama to lose twice, and I'm not sure. I could see Yokohama maybe slipping up once, maybe drawing one, but yeah, I think they've probably just about got their noses far enough ahead that they'll take second. And then Okayama, I think, they're already guaranteed a playoff spot. I mean, the playoffs it's good to have them back, and it is exciting at the end of the season to have that extra kind of bit of intrigue to teams still having stuff to play for. But it's been confirmed again that this year the winner of the playoffs will then play the third bottom team in J1, and the third bottom team in J1 only needs to draw to stay up. So it's a bit of a kind of I don't know how you put it. It's not a proper playoff. I think the winner should get the prize of a place in J1. So if you're the team that is in the relegation playoff, you should have to win it. I don't think you should be at home and able to draw to keep your J1 place. So it takes a little bit of the shine off, because usually there's that feeling of success. Like if you get in the playoffs, you're only a game or two away from going up. But even if you win the sort of the J2 playoff section of the playoffs, you still then have to beat the third bottom team in J1, which could hopefully be, hopefully Vissel Kobe go straight down. But it could be someone like Kobe, and you'd have to think that, you know, any of the teams from J2 playing against Kobe away are going to have to really, really be, you know, in top form to get the win that needs,
well, yeah,
they need to go up.
There are some big teams down at the bottom of J1 this year, aren't they? So it's going to be a tall order, yeah, as you mentioned, to get anything from a game against them. Obviously, the teams aren't great because they're down at the bottom of J1, but they're not bad by J2.
No, well, and comparatively, I think, yes. if it was a one-off neutral venue, you know, winner takes all, then I think on their day, any of the teams from J2 could be a Kobe or a Gamba or a Shimizu or whoever's down there. But I just think the way that it's weighted so heavily in the favour of the J1 team, just it does make it very, very difficult for the J2 team to go up.
Well, let's move on and talk about the playoff zone then. Just real quick before we do, as you mentioned, Yokohama FC, the games that they have left, they've got to go away to the bottom side, Ryukyu, who we'll talk about in a few minutes. Then they're at home to Oita and at home to Kanazawa, and they go away to Kumamoto in the final game. But you imagine their fate will already be decided by then. So although that's a daunting trip, I think they might not need any points from that game. Okayama, three of their last four are away. They go to Kanazawa, then Kofu. The last home game is against Akita, and then they go away to Tokyo Verdy in the final round. So Okayama, they've got a 5-point gap to make up, and only one home game left to do it. But as you mentioned, Sean, they've been in absolutely banging form, haven't they? So it's not inconceivable that they go and win all of those away games. But how about the playoff section then? To be honest, in my notes, I haven't got anything about Kumamoto this time. That's not because we hate Kumamoto and we hate Gary Irwin necessarily. Obviously, great guy, and I'm hoping to have him back on the pod soon. But Kumamoto just look, they're fourth at the moment. They seem certain to get a playoff place as far as I'm concerned. I think they're well in the playoff zone, aren't they? So what about the other teams? I don't know if you agree with me, Sean, but I think now Tokushima in ninth, they're 6 points adrift. I think they're too far back. So I'm drawing the line at Nagasaki in eighth for kind of potential playoff team. So if we assume that Okayama and Kumamoto are going to be in, probably as third and fourth, that leaves kind of four teams fighting for the other two places in my head. So that's Oita, Sendai, Yamagata, and Nagasaki. Do you agree with my analysis there? Am I a bit harsh on some teams, or what do you think?
I agree with Rowasso. I think they're guaranteed. They've been very good all season, very solid, consistent. Obviously, in Oki, they've got a great coach, experienced coach, and they play good football. And they almost seem like, I haven't watched them that closely, but it almost seems like they're not really feeling the pressure. It seems like he just kind of enjoys sending his team out, playing a certain way of football. And, you know, if they win, they win. If they don't, then, you know, next week they'll keep going the same way, and he kind of feels confident they'll get the results. So it seems like they're not really feeling much pressure of late, whereas the teams just below them, obviously Oita, Sendai, are kind of comparatively big clubs. They've been up in J1 fairly recently. They're expected to be in the race for the promotion. Obviously Sendai changed manager not that long ago, even though they're sort of up in the playoff picture. So I think there's more expectation there. And when there's expectation, obviously that brings with it pressure that maybe then means that results, if you don't deal with the pressure well, the results are not so good. And I think that speaks sort of, it's true for the chasing teams you mentioned as well. I probably agree that Vortis is where you draw the line, just because they're so ridiculous in how many games they draw. They've drawn 23 of their 38 games this season, which is just, it's just silly. I mean,
they could make up.
They're only 6 points behind Sendai in sixth, and Sendai do not look particularly confident at the moment. They've changed formation under their new manager to three at the back, so they're kind of adjusting at this key point of the season to kind of a new way of playing. He's kind of changed a few of the regulars as well to try and kickstart the team, and it hasn't really worked. Oita similarly are not, they're not a particularly consistent team. The coach changes the players around a lot. There doesn't seem, it's quite hard to kind of, if you were to sit down and kind of put down your best 11 for, say, the top four, you could pretty much do it. You'd be like, if everyone's fit and everyone's informed, this is pretty much the team they go for, maybe with one or two players could switch in and out. But when you look at Oita, Sendai, it's really hard to know from week to week what, or has been. Sendai recently, since when they changed manager, have been a bit more consistent, but it's almost impossible to know what team Oita are going to put out each week. So I can see Oita and Sendai not doing great in the last four. I could see them each losing one or two and slipping up. But can teams beneath them, you know, can I see Vortis suddenly winning four in a row? Probably not. Just because, yeah, they just I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's tactical, if it's mental, what it is. But I mean, they've only won 10 games all season, and they're still up in ninth and mathematically in with a chance of getting into the playoffs. Are they going to win almost half as many again in their last four? I just can't see it happening. And then beneath them, you've got Jeff, who are Jeff, so they're obviously not going to do it. They're quite happy to just keep coasting along in mid table and talking about next year, what they're going to do next year. And Machida, yeah, have really fizzled out. It's been a bit disappointing. They've had chances, and sort of at the end of games recently, they've just been conceding too many goals. I don't know what it is, whether it's just lack of squad depth, whether it's just lack of quality in the key areas. But I think, yeah, those teams are probably just don't have enough now to get the points needed to get up into the playoffs. So I think, yeah, you're right to draw the line there. And I honestly don't know. Out of those four,
there's not much to choose between them.
There's really not. Yeah. Yamagata, yeah, they play some nice stuff at times under Klamowski, but again, they've sort of flattered to deceive a bit towards the end of the season. They've had a few injuries and whatnot, but you know, I think every team has to deal with that. You can't really use that as an excuse. They've got decent enough players in reserve. They bought in a couple of players, including what's his name? Disaro, Akira.
Yeah.
Disaro came in from Shimizu. So he's a decent option to have up front at this level. Kabayama came back in on loan from Marino. So they've got enough players to come in. Yamada has been, I assume he's been injured. He was out for a few games and he's been restricted to the bench recently. He's key for them usually. So maybe the fact that he hasn't been able to start has maybe not helped the team. And Nagasaki too, similarly to Oita, they just keep chopping and changing. Coach has brought in a couple of really young centre-backs recently. Shirai and Kikuchi suddenly were thrown in. And I think, I forget which one of them it was, but one of them got absolutely turned inside out.
Kikuchi, yeah.
Yeah, Kikuchi, wasn't it, at the weekend. Just got, yeah, completely done for pace, done for strength. The striker cut inside and scored the goal to basically, yeah, sort of confirm a defeat for them. And it's like, yeah, they just don't look like it. I think out of these four, it seems like whichever of them get in the playoff, it's almost like they're going to kind of stumble into it rather than no one. We mentioned Okayama and Kumamoto are looking confident and they're playing good football and looking solid at the moment. These four chasing, it's kind of like, you know, which one of them is going to end up kind of being in the right place at the right time, almost. Yeah.
Well, I think
with four games to go.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning. Oita fifth at the moment, and I think you're right to say they've been inconsistent during the season. But they're six games unbeaten right now. But if you look at the fixtures they got left, I mean, they got Nagasaki at home. Then they're going to go away to Yokohama, who will need points. They're at home to Yamagata as well. So they've got like kind of three of the top six left to play. And then the last game of the season, they're away at Ryukyu. And again, yes, we'll talk about Ryukyu shortly, but that might not be an easier game as it looks. For Sendai, I think they've only got one win in eight, right? The form is terrible. They've changed manager, but not really got any kind of bounce from that. It's starting to look like that might have been a bit of a rash decision. They've got left to play Tokyo Verdy at home. Then they've got to go away to Niigata. In round 40. I think Niigata might still need a point or two at that point, so that won't be easy. And they've just been absolutely spanked by Okayama, haven't they, Sendai, in the previous game, so that's not good. Then they've got to play Kumamoto at home, and then last game they go away to Akita. So I think Oita and Sendai, they're in contrasting form at the moment, but they don't have the easiest run-ins, I wouldn't suggest. For Yamagata, who are seventh right now, they're 4 points behind, but they have the extra game, don't they? So their fixtures that they have left, they've got Niigata at home, then the game in hand is away at Omiya. You never quite know what kind of Omiya side you're going to be up against. They've got to play Mito at home, then they go away to Oita, and then they have Tokushima at home. So again, three home games left out of the five, and... I don't know. I feel like Yamagata, you're right that they haven't really been firing on all cylinders. But yeah, they're good to watch, and they're probably my favourite of the four teams. But I don't know if that doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean they're going to get six. For Nagasaki, they go away to Oita, then they host Tokushima, then they have a back-to-back home games because they've got Yamaguchi. That might be a good game because Yamaguchi are safe. But on the other hand, Yamaguchi are kind of playing with the handbrake off, aren't they? So that could be tough. And then last game for Nagasaki is away at Omiya. So I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Sean. I think it's going to be two from these four, but it just really it really depends who can kind of organise themselves the best over the last
Well, I think the thing you mentioned, obviously, Montedio have got that game in hand. I think everything for them could rest on if they win that. Because they're currently 4 points behind Sendai, but if they win their game in hand, then they're only a point behind, and then it's going to be sort of every round of games, it's going to be a kind of real sort of cat and mouse of you need to make sure you're not letting any points slip. I think if they don't win that game, if they're still 4 points behind with three games left to go, you wonder psychologically then if they're just feeling like they missed their chance. As I said before, I can't see Oita or Sendai suddenly going on a four-game winning run, bearing in mind as well the fixtures that each team have got. None of them have got kind of an easy run in. I can't see any of these teams getting more than maybe 6, 7, 8 points over the run in. So it just depends how many points their rivals for the playoff places drop in the meantime.
I think my gut feeling is, and this is based on nothing other than, as mentioned, guts, I think it's going to be Oita and Yamagata. I think Sendai, the form has been so poisonous. Defensively, they're very poor, and I think they've got the second worst defence in the top half. And only Verdi have conceded fewer. I know, on the other hand, they score a lot, but they haven't been scoring many in the last few games. I think it's probably just the way the fixtures have fallen, just the way I'm feeling right now. I think Oita and Yamagata, who I would tip to be in the top six in the season. But like you said, I think any two of these four, it's going to be two from these four, isn't it, realistically?
Yes, I think so. And I agree that Oita have just got enough quality individuals that they brought in. Mu Kanazaki recently, Big Pod Sam will be happy that Nagasawa was back in the mix the other day and scoring again, so he could be back up in J1 again next year, which I'm sure Sam will be
delighted
about. So I just think Oita have got enough individuals that and they've obviously got that 5 point cushion over Montedio. Obviously Montedio have got the game in hand, but they've got that cushion. So Oita definitely are the favourites to be in there. Nagasaki, I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't see them getting enough. They're a bit of a mess, just selection wise. Players like Cristiano haven't really sparked. They look like a really good pickup at the start of the season. He just hasn't really done much. Kayo Cesar gets a lot of hype from Nagasaki fans, but he's been in and out of the team this year. I don't know if he's been injured, if he's just been out of form or what it is, but very inconsistent. Etigard Jr. as well has not been great. He had a bit of a purple patch in the just before the summer, I think, but he's faded recently. Uenaka has been in and out with injuries. Sawada still seems to play every single game, and although he's a decent enough player, I don't really understand why he's sort of such an immovable object for the team. I don't really think he comes up with enough crucial contributions. So they don't really seem like a coherent unit at the moment. And I think at this point in the season, you kind of need that consistency.
Yeah, it is surprising how much they have struggled to nail down like the main striker positions, I think, because I watched a game recently where Ryohei Yamazaki came on, and he played a bit like how I play at five-a-side, which is very enthusiastic, but a bit late in the tackle. He got sent off. He picked up two yellow cards in quick succession. And then in the game at the weekend, Ken Tokara started up front, but he had to go off injured after about 20 minutes. So it's just, it's strange to have, like, I mean, if I had Edgar Jr. available, Edgar Jr. would play. He wouldn't be on the bench. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I wonder if perhaps Fabio Carile, the coach, has already got one eye on next season. Perhaps that would be wise with the you know the way things are in the league table right now. But
possibly.
Yeah, it's weird. Like you mentioned, the top four have that very settled starting 11, more or less. And then when you, as you go further down the playoff kind of places, it gets a bit more difficult to work out.
Yeah.
Does even the manager know which the best team is? I think that's a criticism you could level at Machida as well this year, isn't it? All right, Sean, we've done the fun stuff. We've done the glitz and the glamour of potential J1 promotion. So it's time now to look at the wrong end of the table. I think we were chatting a little bit online in midweek, and I was kind of giving up on Ryukyu, but you were still hopeful. But as it is, they're bottom. They're 5 points adrift of safety now. And I think they haven't scored a goal in six games.
Yeah.
Is that right? So are you, I think with a heavy heart, because we have a lot of Ryukyu supporting friends of the pod, you know, but I just can't see them getting, I think they need 3 wins from the last 4 games minimum. And I don't think that they're going to do it. What do you think?
When we spoke at the weekend, it was before the game against Tochigi.
Oh yes, that's a very important point. Yes, sorry, I should have mentioned that.
Yeah, I felt like that was a huge chance for Ryukyu to get a big 3 points. Tochigi were without two of their sort of regular three centre backs, and I just felt like that was the chance. And you kind of know how Tochigi are going to play. It doesn't matter who the manager is, who the players are. You know how they're going to play, and I felt like that was a chance to just kind of go for it. Throw everything you had, pour forwards and try and get the win. And Ryukyu again, failed to score in that game. So you said now it's 6 games without a goal, 5 points from safety. It's very difficult. I really don't understand why they've been so bad all season, because they've got good players and they've got reasonable depth. They should have more than enough to be a solid kind of mid-table. I don't think they're any worse really on paper than Mito, Renova, certainly not any worse than Akita or Kanazawa. So I don't fully understand how they're still as poor as they are. I went to their game against Verdi probably a couple of months ago now, might even have been longer, and one thing I did notice was the manager seems to be incredibly angry all the time. Like, throughout the game, he was just constantly sort of in his technical area screaming and yelling at his players and sort of, or turning around and kind of gesturing at the bench and just didn't look particularly happy with what was going on.
I don't think he was very pleased with Ren Ikeda's 91st minute header against Tottenham, straight the keeper.
That was what reminded me of that. I saw his reaction then, and I was thinking kind of, as a player myself, like when you've got a coach who's just constantly on at you, it doesn't serve necessarily to motivate. You know, occasionally, if a coach occasionally does that and balls you out, it does work because it, you know, it gets you focused and it sort of snaps you back into concentration. But if you've got a guy that's just always like that, I think in the end, it either just drains your confidence or you just end up kind of thinking, he goes again. It loses the effect.
Yeah, I think that's true. Well, they did have that bounce when he first joined, didn't they? They went on a kind of little unbeaten run. It looked like, I still think, you know, we can probably save the kind of final analysis for the end of the season, but I think they stuck with the previous manager, Tetsuhiro Kina, for too long.
And maybe they should never have got rid of Higuchi.
That's probably true.
That was where it all went wrong. But yeah,
they were like ninth when he was fired. They were like in the table, yeah.
I think they got the bounce. They did a Charlton with Alan Kirbishley, didn't they? They were like, we should be better than this. We should be pushing on higher, without realising that, it's not quite as easy as that. Maybe they got the bounce with Nacho Fernandez coming in because he brought in that kind of bit of fire and stuff. And initially it worked on the players because they were like, right, okay, this is good. And then after kind of 2 months, 3 months of him just constantly screaming and yelling and never seeming to be happy, maybe they started to think, well, Christ, come on, give us a break. And yeah, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know anything about what's going on at the training ground or, you know, how the mood is between the players and the coach. But just completely looking from the outside in, I wonder if you're rooted to the bottom of the table and haven't scored for six games, if that kind of leadership is what's needed. You need to be pulling together and doing all you can to sort of scrape the points. And it doesn't seem at the moment that, like you said, six games in a row without even scoring is relegation for anywhere in the world.
Momentum is so important going into the final month, isn't it? And they just don't have any. I think that the games that they have left, they've got Yokohama FC at home coming up on Saturday evening. Not an easy match at all. Then they go away to Kanazawa, who are safe, I think. Then they go away to Jeff, who are Jeff, as you mentioned earlier. And then the last game is at home to Oita, by which time everything might be academic by then. So I'm just not really sure. You know, historically speaking, if you look back at the J2 kind of league table since it had a 22-team league, which I think has been about 10 years. I think J2's had a 22-team league for about 10 years. You normally need about 40 points to finish third bottom.
Yeah.
And, you know, they that means they need maths. Again, a weak point on the pod, as we've established, but that's three wins from the last four. I really hope they it'd be amazing if they did do it, but it seems unlikely. And the body language of the players, not just the manager at the end of the touchy game, suggested I don't think they really think it's possible now. But talking of body language at the final whistle, Sean, what about Iwate? So they're second bottom. They're 2 points ahead of Ryukyu, but I think 3 points adrift of safety, aren't they? They're 3 points inside the relegation zone. And I think they, for the four games that they have left, they have to go away for three of them. They go away to Yamaguchi. Then they've got Verdy at home. They go to Gunma in round 41, which has all the potential to be a hashtag big boy football. And then it's Kofu away in the last match. So what are we thinking, Sean? I don't want to kind of make the relegation dogfight seem less exciting, but Iwate are in very, very big trouble, aren't they?
Oh, well, I don't know, actually. I think I can see them picking up the odd result, bearing in mind how average Gunma have looked recently. I can't see Gunma picking up more than a win or two. And I think Morioka, although they've not been winning lately, I always feel like there's always a chance that they could win a game. With Ryukyu recently, they haven't had that momentum. With Gunma, when they do win, it always seems kind of like sort of a bit out of the blue. You didn't see it coming. Whereas with Morioka, I always feel like they're always kind of in with a shout. I never feel like they're sort of during games as well. They never seem to get kind of really, really outplayed for the whole match. The one thing that I would say is that it's a bit like we mentioned for a couple of the teams higher up the table. It's nigh on impossible to predict who is going to be playing for them from 1 week to the next. They've got a massive squad, and the manager Akita insists on using every single player. So players will be out of the squad for like a month, and then suddenly they'll be back in the starting lineup, and then they'll disappear again, and then they've got about six or seven centre backs in the squad, all of whom seem to have played a fair number of games. So I can see them picking up sort of 4-6 maybe points over the last few games, which could be enough, depending obviously what Gunma end up doing.
Well, yeah,
you said they're playing Gunma in one game.
This is the penultimate game. Yeah,
so that could be what decides it.
Could be like a straight shootout.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I quite like Morioka. There's something I quite like about. I think it's just because they've got that tiny stadium, like, you know, the sort of small. It's all very close. It all kind of seems very like. I don't know, sort of like old-fashioned, almost sort of like non-league.
Yes.
Back in England, like very
do you,
kind of.
Do you get a bit of a Stoke City and the Premier League vibe of like we're not really supposed to be here, but
yeah, we're enjoying there's something it. I quite like about that, and I think the way they play is yeah, it's not always effective, but they've got a few decent sort of ball-playing players. They've got a couple of comedy big-boy Brazilians up front that bundle around.
Well, how exciting was it to see Brenner, Cross and Cristiano head in at the weekend? Because you just assume they're not allowed to play together.
Right, they did. Yeah. So that kind of thing, I think, is... I don't know, it just adds... Yeah, there's something kind of a bit of charm to the team as well. So I don't know. I think, yeah. Okay. Again, I think a bit like what I said with Kumamoto, who also came up last year from J3, who were kind of like almost can't believe that they're in with a chance of going up to J1 straight away. So they're just kind of enjoying it and going out each week without any pressure. I kind of feel like there's something similar with Morioka, where they're like, well, everybody kind of assumed we were going to be going straight back down anyway. And we're still in with a chance of not going down. It's in our hands, you know. We've got four games to go.
Well, yeah, they have had some impressive results. Like, I mean, they won 3-0 away at Yokohama FC.
Yeah.
I think they won away at Jeff as well, didn't they, early on in the season? They had a good start. So even though three of the last four games are away, they're not the most intimidating games, are they? Yamaguchi, Gunman and Kofu, who've not been that good this year. So... I think the only potential red flag with Kofu is that Willian Lear has suddenly realised the new contract's not going to sign itself, and he's scoring suddenly playing really well and sprinting.
Well, yeah.
But I think one point worth mentioning is Gunma. Even though they managed to let in six goals against Yamaguchi at the weekend, goal difference wise, they're still much better off than Iwate, aren't they? So if they, you know, that could be almost like having an extra point if they finish level on actual points, I think.
It could be, but then I think that's where that head-to-head comes in, because I can see, see maybe, you just listed their fixtures there, but I can kind of see Morioka maybe sneak in a win and a draw elsewhere too. So if they were to get 7 points, three of them against Gunma, that suddenly lifts them up to what you said, that kind of that 40-point mark, which they need, and then it would be, you know, then Gunma would have to be winning at least one of their other games, and then once you've got the pressure and the tension of everything, we should, I guess, mention the fact that we don't know yet if the second bottom team definitely goes down, because we're not sure what the situation is with regards to Iwaki in J3 and if they're going to be given a license or not. You'd assume, with things being left this late, that they will be given one, that the league is just kind of is waiting to see what happens, because you think if they weren't going to get it, they would just say, no, sorry, you're not going to, you know, you haven't fulfilled the criteria. But they're sort of, maybe the league is just waiting to see until it's confirmed that Iwaki are definitely going to be in one of those promotion spots before they have to make the call. But we don't know for sure. So there's a chance that it's only the bottom team that goes down. So it's a bit, I think it's a bit bad that we don't know.
This should all be sorted out before the season starts, shouldn't it?
It does affect the situation, because if you know that finishing second bottom means they're safe, it changes your whole mental approach, because then they're only 2 points away from safety rather than five. So like you said, at the end of the Tochi game, they might have felt like, well, that's it, that was our chance, we're done now. But if you only need to move up one place, then it changes the whole way that managers are going to approach games, how players are going to feel motivated for. So the fact that we don't know yet is a bit off, I think.
Well, if foreigners aren't allowed to change their visa status while they're inside Japan, I don't see why J-League teams should be allowed to change their license status mid-season. Seems incongruous to me. But I think, to be honest, Sean, my gut feeling is I think Ryukyu are not gonna get out of this now. They've left themselves far too much to do, I think, over the last month of the season. So I think Ryukyu, we can say, are probably going to finish in the bottom two. We're not sure where. I think for me, it's, like you said, a shootout between Iwate and Gunma for the other relegation zone place. Just to be clear, Gunma's games that they have left, they got Omiya at home, Kumamoto away, Iwate at home, and then Mito away. So two, I would argue, winnable home games against Omiya and Iwate, although obviously the evidence of last weekend is that they're not very good at defending. Yes, I agree. I think straight shootout between Iwate and Gunma, and that round 41 match, Gunma against Iwate, looks absolutely massive. What about Omiya, who are fourth bottom? They have a game in hand, so they've got five games left. I mean, have they done enough, do you think, to be? I mean, they're still in the conversation, I suppose, but do you anticipate they'll be okay now?
I do, yeah. I think since Naoki Solomon came in, he's kind of steadied the ship enough. I still don't think they're anywhere near as good as they should be, considering the, you know, the finances they've got compared to other teams in J2, the players that they've got in the squad. And there's a lot of the players that don't even get a look in for the Omiya sort of starting 11, or even the squad, would be, you know, a lot of other J2 teams would have them probably as regulars. So I think, yeah, they still can't, they can't look at this season as a success if they do stay up, which I think they will. But I think, yeah, Solma has come in, settled things down, pretty much settled upon his sort of favoured 11, 12, 13 players, and is giving them chances to play every week to build up some kind of understanding. And again, yeah, they've got that extra game. And that extra game, again, we mentioned it for how important it is for Yamagata, but I think, yeah, obviously for Omiya too. Like, I think if they win that, that pretty much decides it in their favour, that they're going to be up. Same as for Yamagata. If Yamagata win it, I think they'll then probably have enough momentum to take them into the playoff places. So that, yeah, that midweek game, I think, is it next week?
Yes, I believe so. The 5th of October.
Wednesday, yeah. So that one definitely will be one for people to keep an eye on, because, yeah, at this stage of the season, it's quite rare to have sort of have two teams both with, you know, so much riding on that one fixture. So yeah,
agreed.
That will be good. But yeah, I think Omiya will be fine. I think they've got them three.
Yeah, I think Omiya, they've got five games to go. As you mentioned, three of those are at home. So the fixtures are, they go away to Gunma, then they've got the home game against Yamagata in midweek, then home to Yamaguchi as well, which looks okay, away at Tokushima, then at home to Nagasaki. And as we mentioned, 40 points is kind of the magic number at the bottom of J2 these days, and Omiya have got 38. So just one more win, you'd imagine, would probably be enough to just about keep them out of trouble. I agree, not an amazing season by any stretch of the imagination, but they've escaped again. Sean, so they look like they're going to escape again. So we should say, yeah, well done to all involved, I suppose. Sean, have you got time to stick around for a preview of the games coming up this weekend, or are you?
I've got 5-10 minutes. So let's do
then,
it.
Yeah, thanks for all the analysis on the J2 kind of standings. Let's take a quick break for comfort, and when we come back, please help me run through the round 39 fixtures coming up this weekend. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Sean is still with me. I think he's got an English muffin ready to eat, so we won't keep you long, Sean. Don't worry. Just real quick, the round 39 games are coming up this weekend in J2, so it's what I like to see. The games split fairly evenly across Saturday and Sunday. So let's take a look at the Saturday games. Sean, it's October the 1st, which is a bit scary. There are some games at 2 p.m. as we kind of end this kind of summertime schedule. It's Yamagata hosting Niigata, so the leaders go to the 7th place team, and Kofu against Tochigi at 2 p.m. And the game that I thought looked most interesting this time is Gunma against Omiya, so 20th hosting 19th. On Saturday. Then at 4 p.m, Tokushima against Machida, two teams who were kind of probably looking forward to the end of the season now, maybe. At 6:30, second place Yokohama FC are away at Ryukyu, the bottom side. And then there's one game at 7 p.m, Oita against Nagasaki, so a game with some implications for the playoff places. It's 5th against 8th. Sean, if you could pick one or two, which games do you like the look of on the Saturday slate?
On Saturday, I would go with. Oh, they all look pretty good. Well, except for Corfu Tachi. Vortis Machida is guaranteed to be a draw, isn't it? That's guaranteed to be a 1-1. I would probably be inclined to go with Yamagata against Albirex. I just think Albirex are really flying now, and they'll want to wrap up promotion soon. They don't want to slip up and then, you know, have teams gradually getting closer and the pressure to build. So I think Albrecht will want to get it wrapped up. Yamagata, as we said, have still got to get points on the board, and they haven't looked great recently. They lost against Verdi at the weekend the pitch was horrific early on anyway. It really picked up well in the second half.
Yeah, that was amazing, yeah.
That wasn't ideal, but obviously, as the cliche goes, it was the same for both teams, so you can't really use that as an excuse. So I think, yeah, that one will be interesting, because if Yamagata were to lose again, what impact does that have on their confidence as the playoff places maybe start to slip a little further towards the horizons? But if they can win it, then yeah, that would be a huge confidence boost. And I'd probably go with Yuki against Yokohama, just because I think this is it for Yuki, isn't it? If they were to get a win there, we've mentioned that Yokohama haven't really been in scintillating form lately. If Yuki could pick up the win, it has an effect on both ends of the table. Yuki might suddenly feel like they've got a chance of a great escape, and Yokohama might be looking over their shoulders a bit nervously, thinking that maybe promotion, automatic promotion at least, might have a risk of slipping away from them. So I'd probably pick those two.
Fair enough. Yes. And I think maybe for Oita and Nagasaki, I mean, if Oita can avoid defeat in that game, I think it probably more or less confirms they'll be top six and Nagasaki won't be, but plenty to keep an eye on. What about the Sunday games then on October the 2nd? Sean, everything's in the afternoon at 1 p.m. It's Kumamoto against Akita, so the fourth place team pretty much guaranteed the top six finish, you imagine. They're hosting Akita, who are 15th. Then plenty of excitement at 2 p.m. There's Kanazawa against Okayama, so the third place team going to the 16th place team. Sendai in sixth, but badly out of form. They desperately need a win, don't they? They're hosting Tokyo Verde, who are in mid-table. And then Yamaguchi against Iwate, it is on the slate as well. So Yamaguchi now safe, hosting the second bottom team, Iwate. Quick point of interest, this game's going to be played at Shimonoseki, not Yamaguchi's regular home stadium. I think they play one game a year in Shimonoseki, so I think this is the one this time. And also at 2 p.m. but not as mega is Mito hosting Jeff Chiba. So Sean, what about the games on Sunday?
I think the Renofa Morioka game kind of jumps out, because as you said, Renofa have been playing some quite exciting stuff or entertaining stuff lately. They're not the best team defensively, but they've got some good players going forward. They brought in Takai. Takai came back, didn't he? Is it Kazuma?
Kazuma, yeah, that's right. What a Kazuma goal! Takai. What a goal, by the way, against Kuma, that volley.
Yeah. So he's a very good player, and they brought in Naraoka as well from Shimizu on loan, who was, I think he was at Sagamihara last season, and he's a really good player in central midfield. Really good ball player. Really, really good technique. I think he might be injured at the moment. But with him, with Takai, with the likes of Numata, Maie came back in as well. So, they've got a lot of kind of fun players to watch. Yamaguchi are always good value. And as I said, with Morioka, they're kind of in the last chance saloon now. So I think that game could be a bit of an end-to-end. I'm probably jinxing it, but I can see goals in that one.
I'm curious to see what kind of state the pitch is in at that stadium, because I don't think it's used that much. I could be wrong. It might be used for like lower, non-professional games, but it had a lot of rain, right, the last few weeks. So I'm just not. Yeah, it'd be interesting. There's a lot of variables about that game.
So I'd go with that one, and if I have to pick one more, probably go with Kanazawa or Okayama. Kanazawa, now, as you said, they're safe. They've kind of done enough again under Yanagishita to stay up. So they don't have any pressure on them, really, to get points. I think maybe mathematically they still need one or two, but, they still be fine. And Okayama, they're just sort of steamrolling through everyone at the moment. Yordi Bice obviously has been getting some attention with his sort of motivational speeches after games, and
I think he's planning for his post-football career as a kind of evangelical, motivational speaker.
Either that, or I was thinking what he's probably doing is he's pitching around for a contract for next year, because what he usually does is gets a team promoted, sends them on their way, and then goes somewhere else the following year to get them promoted. So I thought maybe he's just reminding maybe Vigata Sendai or Jeff or someone, like, hey, if you want to go up next year, here's my number,
come and get me please
so I think that one, I think both those games would be good good entertainment value.
It's worth mentioning as well, obviously the results from the Saturday games are going to have an impact, right? Like if Yokohama FC have messed up against Ryukyu, possibly lost on Saturday, then Okayama win away at Kanazawa, then suddenly the sort of second place race for second place is back on, isn't it? And same for the playoff teams. Yamagata have beaten Niigata, Oita have beaten Nagasaki, and then Sendai don't win against Verdi, then that kind of playoff picture gets cloudy and exciting again, doesn't it? So
yeah, all right, exactly.
Plenty of games to keep an eye on as usual then at the weekend, Sean. Yeah, hopefully we can enjoy it together on Twitter with other like-minded individuals. So thanks as always for coming on, Sean. Sorry it's been 35 rounds since we had you back. But
no worries. Yeah,
at least you've been having lots of uninterrupted sleep and been able to go to bed early for a few months. So that's good news.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Sean. thanks so much for coming on. And hopefully we can talk again at some point soon and see how the J2 is progressing. Perhaps an end of season review might be a good time to get together.
Yeah, sounds good, mate.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot, Sean. And thanks as always to our listeners for downloading and listening to J Talk podcast and J Talk Extra Time. We appreciate that. For the patrons who back us with cold hard cash, we appreciate that as well. So thank you for doing that. Please stay tuned. That's all the J2 news for this time. But Magic Mike Innes is going to be along in a moment after some music. He has all the latest J3 news after a pretty crazy round of J3 results at the weekend. So yeah, please hang around for that. Here's Mike Innes. But from Sean and me, that's all. Thanks. See you soon. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host Mike Innes and in this episode I'll be looking back on a dramatic set of fixtures in round 26, as well as previewing the round 27 matches coming up this weekend. First, an item of J3 news since the last pod. Fujieda MyFC say the recent typhoon has caused extensive damage to the power supply, water and drainage facilities of their Fujieda Sports Park home ground. The club indicates they don't expect repairs to take place anytime soon and that they are in negotiations with the City Council and the J-League about the staging of home games from October onwards. MyFC's next home fixture is currently scheduled to be this coming Saturday against YSCC Yokohama. Now onto the action, and round 26 kicked off with two big games on Saturday the 24th of September. Second placed Kagoshima United travelled to Gainare Tottori on a run of 5 wins in 6 games, achieving good results without necessarily looking convincing. As mentioned on the pod a couple of weeks ago, their defence has been looking leaky, and that fragility came home to roost on an extraordinary evening at the Axis Bird Stadium. The alarm bells started ringing for Kagoshima as early as the 3rd minute when Tottori's Ryuji Sawakami was left in space to get in a 25-yard shot that forced a good save from Fumashidasaka, Hiroto Sese volleying the follow-up only just off target. On 12 minutes, Shirasaka parried a shot by Yuya Taguchi, who had plenty of time to square it to Sawakami to make it 1-0 from close range. Sawakami scored again 9 minutes later, converting Daichi Ishikawa's knock to the far post after a weak defensive header by Shintaro Ihara. 2-0 down at half-time, but things soon got a lot worse for Naoto Otake's team, who went on to concede 3 in 20 minutes after the restart. First, on a counter-attack, Taguchi fed Koki Ishii, who stepped easily away from Eisuke Watanabe and curled his shot inside the post. Then, Taiki Anai threaded a pass through the visiting defence for Ryo Tamura to blast beyond the exposed Shirasaka, and Taguchi made it 5-0, hammering into the roof of the net after Tamura's direct run forced Kagoshima onto the back foot. Gainare rounded off the scoring in the 86th minute via the simplest pass and move, which ended in rookie substitute Mun Inju's low ball across the face of goal being lashed in by Ishikawa. Final score Tottori 6, Kagoshima 0, Gainare's biggest league win since a 7-0 thrashing of Sagamihana in 2018. For Kagoshima, equaling their heaviest ever league defeat. But more importantly, the team's promotion challenge suffers a massive blow in terms of points lost, impact on their goal difference, and the sheer paucity of the performance. Not so many goals, but excitement aplenty in the day's other match too, between Ehime FC and Fujieda Mai FC. The visitors looking to keep going their battle for a place in the top two. In the first half, Fujieda's Kei Uchiyama was the busier of the keepers, blocking a one-on-one with Asahi Yada and later tipping round the post, a powerful drive by Motoki Ohara. Mai FC shifted into the ascendancy after the break, Masahiko Sugita hitting the post after a goalmouth scramble and Kenta Tokushige pulling off great saves from an Akiyuki Yokoyama curler and a low drive by Keigo Enomoto. Fujieda made the breakthrough with 19 minutes left, a Jun Suzuki shot parried by Tokushige, only for Ryo Watanabe to head the rebound over the line for a vital lead. Not that Ehime took things lying down, as in the 80th minute they hit the woodwork twice within a matter of seconds. First through Riki Matsuda after a low cross from Takashi Kondo, then via a Shuma Mihara header following Toshiya Takagi's high ball into the box. But the visitors held firm and it finished Ehime 0, Fujieda 1, the end of the Mighty Mikan's already slim hopes of an immediate return to J2. Mai FC have ground to make up, but they're giving it their best shot. And let's note, too, the sea change in Daisuke Sudo's approach. Less of a gung-ho attack, perhaps, but their previously porous defence has been much more solid in recent weeks, despite the red cards and suspensions described in previous episodes. No goals conceded in their last five games. On to the seven matches played on Sunday the 25th, when the stage was set for Iwaki FC and Matsumoto Yamaga to open up a gap over Kagoshima, who'd slipped to third after their crushing defeat at Tottori. Having lost at FC Imabari last week, leaders Iwaki were at home to mid-table FC Gifu. Not much action in the first half, but Iwaki took the lead just before the break with a typically incisive piece of play, Shota Suzuki chesting down a high ball and feeding on the overlap Masaru Hidaka, whose powerful low cross was converted by rookie striker Ryo Arita. A rare mistake by Riku Saga enabled Gifu to draw level in the 53rd minute. The Iwaki right-back couldn't deal with a Ryo Kubota cross and Yosuke Fujioka pounced to score his 12th of the season. But an error at the other end midway through the second half gave the lead back to Iwaki, for whom Yuto Yamashita slung a free kick into the box. Yosuke Kashiwagi headed it straight up in the air. Kazushige Kirihata came off his line but didn't deal with the high ball, leaving Hiroto Iwabuchi to finish into an empty net. Final score, Iwaki 2, Gifu 1, and every time Hiromasa Suguri's team lose, they bounce back stronger and go on an unbeaten run. Honest endeavour from Gifu, but they were second best. The other main promotion challengers, Matsumoto Yamaga, were on a run of five straight wins, and the coast was clear for them to pick up another 3 points and make the most of Kagoshima's slip-up via their home match against bottom side YSCC Yokohama. As at Iwaki, there weren't many chances in the opening period, and there was an opening goal just before half-time. Unlike at Iwaki, however, it was for the visitors who took a sensational lead when new signing Loris Tinelli cut in from the left, skipped past Riku Nakayama, Yota Shimokawa and Takato Nonomura before firing low to beat Victor at his near post. Matsumoto ramped up the pressure as the second half went on, but Ryosuke Sagawa's goal was rarely in danger, the closest Yamaga came to scoring being Ayumu Yokoyama's long-range effort, which clipped the top of the bar. Final score, incredibly, Matsumoto 0, YSCC 1, the shock result of the season so far, and instead of putting daylight between themselves and their rivals, Yamaga blow their chance and go back behind Kagoshima, ahead of Fujieda by only a single point. For YSCC, a famous victory. For Loris Tinelli, what a way to get off the mark in the J-League. And those defeats for Kagoshima and Matsumoto kept the door ajar for FC Imabari and Katare Toyama to sustain a promotion challenge if they could win their away fixtures. For Katare at Kamatamari Sanuki, it was a first game in charge for new coach Michiharu Otagiri, who made 6 changes to the starting lineup. And what a day it turned out to be for Otagiri and his players. Forgotten man Mateus Laidia opened the scoring with his first goal since March, a looping header from a cross by Daichi Matsuoka on 13 minutes. And Toyama went on to kill the game with 2 more goals in 3 minutes at the end of the first half. Naoto Ando made it 2-0 when he intercepted a loose ball in the centre circle, raced past Sanuki's Genichi Endo as the last man, and finished comfortably beyond the reach of Takuya Takahashi. Matsuoka got the third, picking up a pass from Shunta Takahashi, running at home defender Hayato Hasegawa, and curling a beauty of a 20-yarder inside the far post. With Kamatamare unable to get a look in, 3 became 4 for Katare in the 52nd minute. A clever reverse pass by Takahashi, setting up Ando 10 yards out to get his second of the afternoon. Sanuki did get the ball in the net late on, but Kohei Matsumoto's effort was ruled out for offside after he prodded home the rebound from Kentaro Shigematsu's shot, which cannoned off the bar. Final score, Sanuki 0, Toyama 4. The home side now having picked up just 3 points from the last 11 games. For Katare, Otagiri's debut triumph means they're 5 points off the promotion places with 8 games to play. Imabari, meanwhile, travelled to Tegevajaro Miyazaki and they went ahead in the 13th minute. Marcus Indio heading in Takuro Uehara's free kick as the home defence concentrated on claiming offside rather than protecting their goal. But Miyazaki equalised 9 minutes later under similar circumstances. Hiroki Okuda's free kick headed home by Yudai Okuda, the Imabari back line notable by their lack of involvement. Kazuaki Hashikawa's side hit a purple patch towards the end of the first half, though, as Indio threaded a pass for Kanta Chiba to run onto and angle a beautifully placed shot past Shunsuke Ueda. And that was followed early in the second half by another goal for 19-year-old Chiba, a composed right foot finish after Kazaki Nakagawa had created panic in the home defence with his pace and directness. If Imabari's push for promotion is going to be derailed, however, it'll be by their defence, which, with 22 minutes left, somehow allowed Megumu Nishida's low cross to go all the way across goal to be converted at the back post by the grateful Yuki Okada. But the visitors did manage to see out the rest of the game and it ended Miyazaki 2, Imabari 3. Typical fare for the less than resolute Tegevajaro team of 2022. Imabari claim the win and move to within 6 points of the top 2. But can they rely on that defence? J-Talk Extra Time. Elsewhere, there were first J-League goals for three players. Kai Sasaki for Vanarane Hachinohe at SC Sagamihana. Shun Hirayama of Giramantz Kitakyushu at Fukushima United. And 18-year-old Haruki Toyama of Azul Claro Numazu at AC Nagano Pasairo. Toyama's goal gave Azul Claro a 51st-minute lead when he robbed home keeper Issei Oichi and rolled it into an empty net. A blunder by Oichi, who should have dealt comfortably with a back pass from Hayato Ikegaya. Pasairo drew level 10 minutes later, a brave header by Hiroki Yamamoto, setting up Carlos Duke to run straight at the away defence before laying it off for Reo Yamanaka to score from 12 yards. Another goalkeeper error decided the game, and it was committed by Azul Claro's Hiromu Musha, who let Takuma Mizutani's long-range shot slip through his grasp and over the line. Final score, Nagano 2, Numazu 1. Pasairo climbed to 7th off the back of their first win in 4. Azul Claro have, by some distance, the weakest away record in the division, which Toyama's goal alone could not fix. Neither did the goal for Kitakyushu by Shun Hirayama stop his team from being on the losing side at Fukushima. In the early stages, both sides had goals disallowed within a matter of seconds of each other, offside in both cases. But after a scoreless first half, the home team took the lead soon after the restart. A short corner routine leading to Hiroto Moraoka crossing to the far post, where Shun Obu stole in unmarked to bury a header. With 20 minutes remaining, Fukushima went 2 up after visiting keeper Daiki Goto charged out of his goal to prevent Junya Takahashi getting on the end of a long through pass, only for Yuta Nobe to chip the loose ball back over Goto's head and into the net from 30 yards. Hirayama's goal enabled Giramantz to pull one back 12 minutes from time, squeezed over the line from close range after Taiga Maekawa had rather scuffed his shot. Final score, Fukushima 2, Kitakyushu 1. Toshihiro Hattori's team seemingly achieving stability in mid-table. Giramantz remain fifth bottom as their disappointing season goes on. Kai Sasaki was the odd one out as his first J-League goal helped Hachinohe to victory at Sagamihana. Vanarane almost took the lead in the 7th minute when Masashi Kokubun crashed a stunning 30-yard shot against the bar with Kentaro Kakoi beaten. The visitors did go in front midway through the first half, although they needed a major stroke of luck to do so. Yuki Aida's cross deflected off Sagamihara defender Hiroki Mizumoto straight onto the boot of teammate Kensei Nakashima, who, without knowing a thing about it, volleyed firmly into his own net. Another mistake from the home defence paved the way to Sasaki's moment of glory. A wild swipe of a clearance by Yudai Fujiwara, instead setting things up nicely for Takumi Shimada, who squared it for Sasaki to finish into the roof of the net from 10 yards. Sagamihana did look to get back in the game, a glancing header by Kensei Ukita forcing a goal line clearance by Kokubun, but lacking the suspended Jungo Fujimoto, the hosts could find no way past visiting keeper Kazuki Hattori. Final score, Sagamihana 0, Hachinohe 2. The toothless home side dropped to third bottom in the standings. Vanarane head in the other direction after a rare but convincing away win. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 26, noting that Ehime and Miyazaki have a game in hand. The top six teams are Iwaki with 57 points, Kagoshima and Matsumoto with 53, Fujieda 52, Toyama 48 and Imabari 47. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are in 15th, Hachinohe with 25 points, then it's Sagamihana with 23, Seneki 20, and bottom with 18, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 27 fixtures over the weekend, when there are two big games on Saturday the 1st of October, both home fixtures for promotion contenders. Kagoshima need to recover from their drubbing. The Smoking Volcanoes host Nagano. Noting the news item at the top of the episode, as things stand for Fujieda, there's a very winnable game against YSCC. The other seven matches are on Sunday the 2nd. Leaders Iwaki host Senuki. Matsumoto must bounce back as they head to Numazu. The pair of teams with fresh belief that they can get into the top two are both at home. Toyama against Sagamihana, Imabari against Inform Tottori. Elsewhere, Hachinohe are at home to Ehime, Gifu host Fukushima, and two of the Kyushu teams meet at Kitakyushu, where the visitors are Miyazaki. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.